All right, so tonight we're getting back to a series that we just started. I don't even remember when we had just started. It must have been right after Sukkot, I guess. I don't even remember when. Maybe even before then. I think it was like Tisha B'Av time. It was in the summer, right? We had just started this series. So we really need to reorient ourselves. So tonight we're reorienting ourselves. We'll be reviewing some of the basic concepts, saying a few new things, and then God willing, next week we'll keep moving forward through the topic. And the topic is about Mashiach. Mashiach tonight, particularly, we're going to discuss when, why, and how. When will we be ready for Mashiach's arrival? Why? And I'm not going to talk about the whole 6,000 year thing. That, you know, that's beyond my pay grade. But we'll touch on that maybe another night. But when will we be ready for Mashiach's arrival? Because we're hoping that comes very soon. Why do we long for Mashiach in the first place? And number three is, how will we know who the true Mashiach is? So these are three major topics. And I think last time we spent an entire hour on each of those three topics. So tonight we're going to cover all three in the matter of the course of this, of the class. First, let's start with when. When will we be ready for Mashiach's arrival? So it starts with a right now. Right now we're ready. Marty says, right now we're ready. Let's see what the Gemara has to say about it. Okay, the Gemara says the following. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, on Daf Tzadi Zion, the last chapter of Masechta Sanhedrin, at least the way that it's laid out in the Gemara, it's a little bit different in the Mishnayos, but the way it's laid out in the Gemara, the last chapter of Masechta Sanhedrin, are where all of the topics that we're going to be discussing over the next few months, discussing Mashiach, Olam Haba, what Olam Haba is. Just before we continue the class, I should have mentioned before that tonight's learning is in memory of Pinchas Yehuda ben Rav Dov Klein. Janet's father is Neshama Shko, the highest points in Gan Eden. We wish you long life, and may the schus of our learning tonight and for all those that he inspired just be an aliyah for his neshama. So when will we be ready for Mashiach to come? The Gemara tells us the following, Masechta Sanhedrin on Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis, where that last chapter in Masechta Sanhedrin deals with the topics of Mashiach and Olam Haba, what heaven looks like, what hell looks like, dealing with what the future looks like, Olam Haba, what does it mean that there's going to be this eternal world of Tchias HaMesem, all of those topics that God willing we will get to over the course of the next few months are all contained in the last chapter in the Masechta Sanhedrin. So over here, the Gemara tells us the following. The Gemara says, Rabbi Lezer says, "Im Yisrael osin teshuva, if the Jewish people do teshuva, so then nigalim, so the Mashiach is going to come. Bottom line, what are we waiting for? Teshuva. We're waiting for us to all do teshuva. V'im lav, ein nigalim. If we don't do teshuva, simply put, then there's not going to be redemption." So now the Gemara asks the obvious question. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says back to his friend Rabbi Lezer. I don't know if this happened at the Pesach Seder or not. Im ein osin teshuva, if we don't do teshuva, ein egalim, well, there's not going to be Mashiach. How could that be? How could that be? We shouldn't even bother including in Tarshmona Esrei at Tzemach David Avdacha Meher Tatzmiach. We shouldn't even include the blessing about the redemptive process, and we should only have the blessing of Hashivenu Avinu L'Sarasech, only about Teshuva, right? It can't be that it is 100% completely contingent upon us doing Teshuva by our own fruition. Because if it was, what if we never did Teshuva? And on a macro level, we as a nation did not do a proper Teshuva. So what? There's not going to be a Mashiach. Ella, rather, Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mamid Lahen Melech. Rather, what's going to happen is that Hashem is going to create such a situation that almost forces us to do teshuva. That we're going to have a melech, we're going to have a king, Shigzeros of Kashos Gahaman, that the decrees of this government are going to be just as severe as that of Haman HaRasha, which since Haman there have been governments like that, the Nazis, Yimach Shemo V'Zichron. It's the exact same, dealing with the same Jewish problem, right? There have been governments like this. And then when that happens, Yisrael Osin Teshuvah, we're going to do Teshuvah, Umachsir and Lemutav. And then we're going to be able to have Mashiach come, which means that in principle, they agree. Both opinions, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, are both saying that Mashiach's arrival is contingent upon us doing Teshuvah. It's just that Rabbi Yeshua is saying that Hashem's not going to leave it up to us, meaning he's not just going to wait around for us to get our act together, but he's going to, if he has to, take extreme approaches to make sure we end up doing teshuvah. The Rambam, 1135 to 1204, in his really his compendium of all of oral tradition. In his Mishneh Torah, his magnum opus, so he writes in the laws of Teshuvah. He writes in the laws of Teshuvah the following. He says that yes, this is that 100% it is contingent upon us doing Teshuvah that the Mashiach is going to the Mashiach is going to come, and but all he says that. Kol HaNeviim, that all of the prophets, Kulam Sabo Al Tshuva, that they all are always giving this command and this charge to do teshuva. The Ein Yisrael Nigalin, and that the Jewish people are not going to be redeemed ela b'teshuva, except for with teshuva. But he doesn't add in that other detail that Hashem is going to make us, so to speak, do teshuva. By creating a situation that we must, in order so that we need to have a Mashiach's arrival. So it sounds like from the Rambam's perspective that it's just very simply put, as soon as Klal Yisrael gets their act together, so we'll do teshuva. We're going to have to deal with the issue, the underlying issue that Rabbi Yeshua had, which is that, well, we're just going to sit around waiting forever, right? How could that be? So we're going to have to, we'll get back to that later. But the Ramban, though, seems to take more of the latter approach, where the Ramban in his commentary on the Torah, where the Ramban's commentary on the Torah, it's said by Chassam Sofer that really all Jewish philosophy, what it means to have a Jewish outlook, is all contained within the Ramban, Nachmanides, 1194 to 1270, Spanish Rishon that ended up passing away at the end of his life in the land of Israel, fulfilling his lifelong dream of living in the land of Israel. The Ramban contained within his commentary on the Torah is really what it means to have a Jewish outlook on the world. And the Ramban writes in his commentary on the Torah, he says, sounds like a little bit more like the other approach where he writes, he says, one moment. Here he is. He says that when we have that the Torah says that we're going to have Mashiach when we do teshuva. He says that this is only going to come. This is only going to come once we do teshuva, and then he adds on over here. He says that only that this is going to come, even if it means that muftach shiyazru hamakom al Yisrael, that Hashem is going to, he promises that he is going to make sure that the gula comes, that the salvation comes, even if it means that he's going to assist the Jewish people in the process of doing teshuva, which sounds like Rabbi Yeshua said in the Gemara, that it's not that Hashem's just going to wait around to see if the Jewish people are going to do teshuva, but even if it means that Hashem is going to have to set into motion something that encourages us to do teshuva, so that's going to have to be the what's going to happen. That's going to be what's going to happen.
He's not talking about the Mashiach. It has nothing about where the Mashiach is coming.
No, all it is that Mashiach is going to come once the Jewish people deserve it. Meaning once we go through the teshuva process, that's when we know Mashiach is going to come. Now, according to the Ramban, it sounds like even if it means Hashem is going to have to intervene to make sure the Jewish people do that teshuva process. So the question really that we're left with is that, okay, according to the Ramban, that Hashem is going to set things into motion that encourage us to do teshuva, which, by the way, we are seeing, we're seeing a lot of that today, right? The latest reports, like from the Pew studies that are coming out, is that, right, you have, on the one hand, people that are becoming a lot more secular, but on the other hand, those that are actually engaging in religion, they want to take it seriously. And so that's why orthodoxy, thank God, is on the rise, because people understand that we need to get serious about this. So on the one hand, you have people that are going in the total opposite direction, but that when those that are actually being engaged, that they're doing so, focusing on truth, focusing on Orthodox Torah. So we're definitely seeing this. I mean, there's no question that we're living in a messianic era.
That would be the approach where people are doing it voluntarily, as opposed to
you could say that we're just falling apart at the seams, right? It's an unsustainable model, and people are just kind of looking around and looking for an anchor, right? So it doesn't have to necessarily be that what Hashem sets in motion is a genocide, right? Which unfortunately is happening also with the rise in anti-Semitism, but it could be a spiritual genocide that's taking place, right? Which is right. Which is also happening. So how are we going to reconcile these two approaches, right? Because we are left with the Rambam is kind of open-ended, which is that, so we're just going to wait around, or what if it never happens? So I once heard the following answer from...
Isn't the approach also sort of in contrast...
To the whole concept of teshuva, right?
Well, contradictory to the man's free will.
Right, so I was going to say, really, it's contradictory to the entire concept of... Thank you, Brian. I was going to mention that. It sounds like it's really contradictory to the whole concept of teshuva. The whole concept of teshuva is dependent upon this free will, right? Yeah. That I'm consciously aware, I go through the steps of, I recognize I did something wrong, and now I need to better my ways, and I resolve that I'm not going to be acting that way in the future. That's something that needs to come from the individual, right? So I once heard the...
Outside conditions change, it can influence the way a person exerts his or her free will. So
Right. That's kind of like what we said about Paro, when we spoke about free will, about how Hashem hardened his heart. Here's the following reconciliation I once heard from one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Wiederblink Shlita, who when we were in Smich NYU, he gave a class on Fridays that went through a lot of these topics. So he once said the following: what it says in the Torah is, it says twice when the Torah is describing in Parshas Nitzavim what the days of Mashiach are going to look like and how we're going to get there. The Torah says, "Veshavta ad Hashem Elokecha," that we're going to do teshuva back toward Hashem. "Veshamata b'kolo," we're going to listen to His voice. "B'kol Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Yom," "Atal Bincha b'kol Levavcha Kol Nafshecha," that we and our children are all going to once again be completely reengaged with Hashem and His Torah. Okay, that's one. And then a few psukim later, the Torah once again says that the end result of all of that, of Ki Tishma Bekol Hashem Elokecha. Once we listen to Hashem's voice, L'shmor Mitzvotav Chukotav Haksuv B'Sefer Torah Zeh, and once we've resolved that this is the way we're going to be, is reconnecting ourselves to Hashem. So then, Ki Tashuv El Hashem, once we've returned completely to God, B'chol Vavcha V'chol Nafshecha, with our heart and our soul, so then that's when we're going to have the full redemption. So said Rabbi Wiederblank, perhaps we find both, we can reconcile the two approaches when we look closely at the way the Torah describes these two aspects of the teshuva process. The first time the Torah brings it up, it uses the verb of ad, v'shavta ad Hashem lokecha. We are returning towards God, ad Hashem lokecha. Means it connotes the beginning of the process of teshuva. Versus El Hashem Elokecha is that we've come to the finish line, that the redemptive process will be completed once we do have a full teshuva movement that takes place. But that's not going to prevent the redemptive process from starting. The redemptive process starting, all it's going to take is the Jewish people beginning the teshuva process, right? That beginning of the teshuva process is, of course, already happening, right? No question about it. That's already happening. So we are in the redemptive process. That's without a question. That's because we've started our teshuva. Once we've started it by our own fruition, we've gone about it on our own. We've resolved that this is the way that we really need to be. That we as a people recognize that we're missing something and that we really need to do everything we can to get there. So now Hashem is going to set into motion things that are going to help encourage him, help create an environment that will encourage more teshuva. And that is what the Torah is describing at the end of the process. At the end of the process, we're shafta, we are ki tashuv el Hashem lokecha. We've arrived at the destination with a complete teshuva. So, so when will we be ready for Mashiach's arrival? We'll be ready for Mashiach's arrival once the people, which we already have, we have begun a teshuva process. Now that we've begun this teshuva process, so we just have to have two eyes open. We see all the things Hashem has set in motion that is clearly getting the world ready for the full redemption. And now we have to keep pushing ourselves. We have to keep pushing ourselves in more teshuva and caring for my friend to see how can I help them in their teshuva process as well. You know, there's an amazing statement that's made by the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch, Rabbi Yosef Babad, was the chief rabbi of Chernobyl. He passed away just before the turn of the 19th century, just before the turn of the 20th century. Yeah, just before the turn of the 20th century. He was an incredible Talmud Chacham. He had written an amazing commentary on the 613 mitzvos, beautiful commentary on the 613 mitzvos that unfortunately was stolen. It was stolen by like a thief. Because somebody was like looking to plagiarize. It was mamish, like he was robbed. I forgot which rav he went to get their advice to say that I don't have another copy of my notes, and I can't afford to rewrite it. I can't afford all that paper and all that ink. Can't afford to rewrite it. What do I do? He said, all I have are just these small little handwritten shorthand notes that I have for myself that I was keeping. But it's not like a full book by any, by any imagination. It's just like my shorthand notes for myself that I used when I was writing it. That's all I have. So the rabbi told him, I can't believe I forget who it was. Told him, publish that anyway, because I guarantee you that there are going to be people that appreciate what you have to say, even if it's written shorthand. Okay, so it's going to be only Talmid HaChamim, great Torah scholars, are going to be able to understand what you're actually saying, but for them, it's worth it. And he ended up publishing it, and it took the Jewish world by storm, because those that were actually able to understand the cipher, his handwritten short little, most of it was written in acronyms, were able to actually decipher what he wrote, were blown away by it. And then later printings, they printed it in its full, you know, writing out all of the acronyms and the way that it was supposed to have been originally written. It's one of my favorite Sfarim, but anyone that spent a serious amount of time in yeshiva, it's one of their favorite Sfarim. It's an incredible work. Rav Schechter likes to say that you can fake being the Gadol HaDor if you know everything that's written in the Minchas Chinuch. So the Minchas Chinuch writes something amazing. He says in the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisecha, which is the mitzvah of helping somebody in their fulfillment of mitzvos. He writes over there, he says that not only do you fulfill the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisecha, which is a mitzvah in and of itself to assist others in their fulfillment of mitzvos and staying away from sin, but that you also fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aved, of returning lost objects. That we know there's a mitzvah that if somebody loses something, you return it to them, that's a mitzvah. And then the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, not only does it apply to, let's say, a basketball, but or, you know, just a meaningless material object, but it even applies to a person's life. That if a person saves somebody from physical danger, they fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, says the Minchas Chinuch. If it's going to apply to a basketball and it's going to apply to somebody's physical life and health, then all the more so it should apply to their spiritual well-being as well. If you return their soul to them, that's also fulfillment of Hashavas Aveda. It's an amazing thing. If you stop and consider that you're mamish returning a person's soul to them, you're returning the person to who they really were supposed to be. When we help people in their fulfillment of Torah mitzvos, there's somebody in the shul right now who's doing an amazing thing. That he's in such a smart, gentle, non-aggressive way, doing an incredible job at encouraging people to come to Minyan on a regular basis. Not in a pushy way. Just in a very why don't you come once a week for Mincha Maariv. You know, what night? I'll meet you there. And it's amazing. The minyanim at the shul are just going up in numbers because of this one guy that's just going. Imagine all this chuyos that he's getting in Shemayim for this. It's an amazing thing. So this is what we have to be working on now. We need to be working on myself, making sure that I'm part of the redemptive process in my own personal teshuva, and also helping others as well. Okay, moving on. Why do we long for Mashiach's arrival? So here we don't really need to look anywhere else except for the Torah Kedosha, except for our holy Torah. The Torah tells us in Parshas Nitzavim, we were starting to read it earlier, but the Torah tells us in Parshas Nitzavim, Perek Lamed, the 30th chapter, right before Moshe Rabbeinu's death, he's describing what the days of Mashiach are going to look like. And basically, we're not going to read through the chapter inside, but basically he sums up that Mashiach's arrival will have three major components to it, three major results that are going to be incredible for us. Number one is that we are going to reach incredible spiritual heights. The language the Torah uses to describe this is v'hitivcha v'irbircha ma'avosecha. That we're going to have more goodness than even what our ancestors were able to experience, meaning that we're going to be at a higher spiritual level than even that of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, even that of Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to have a clarity of the creator of the universe to the point that our spiritual being is going to be at such a high level. That's number one. Number two is that there's going to be a sanctification of God's name all over the world. All over the world, the entire world is going to recognize Hashem and His Torah and His chosen people. And that's something that, of course, the entire world can use. And the entire world guiding themselves based off of the Torah. Doesn't mean they have to be Jewish, but just guide themselves according to the Torah. It'd be an incredible world. Absolutely incredible. And number three is that we will once again have a national sovereignty and restoration of our nationality upon the land of Israel. And that's going to include having a Beis HaMikdash once again, being able to have our religious freedom completely in the land of Israel. We're going to be able to govern ourselves according to the Torah within the land of Israel. These are really the three major aspects of Mashiach's arrival. And that's why we are so gung-ho about Tzipita LeYeshua, about this anticipation of Mashiach's arrival. We say it three times a day in our Shmona Esrei. We ask Hashem, at Semach David Avdu Chamerit Atzmiach. And really what we have to have in mind when we say it are these three things. We have to have in mind that we really can use our being uplifted in our spiritual heights, meaning that we have a clarity of Hashem, something that we really could use. And it would be amazing if we could just know what is true and false. It would just be very, very helpful to know those things. The amount of simcha that one has when that happens, right? The Ramah writes, or Moshe Isserles, chief rabbi of Krakow, he wrote that in simcha kataras asfechus, the greatest joy that one can have is clarity. But when we understand Hashem, we understand what's right and wrong, we understand what's good and evil, then we have that clarity and we have the greatest joy in the world. That's number one. The second thing we have to have in mind is the entire world. Imagine the entire world has a recognition like that, understanding Hashem, meaning they're governing themselves according to the Torah. Society is governed by the Torah. It'd be an incredible thing. And number three is having that national sovereignty upon the land of Israel, back in our homeland with peace. Those are the three things we should have in mind when we say that blessing three times a day in the Shmona Esrei.
I know that there's always a discussion. Is it a period of time? Is it a person that comes in the flesh?
Oh, so we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that. We're going to get to that. Of how do we know that Mashiach is here? That's what we're going to have to get to next. So how do we know? How do we know that this that Mashiach's finally here? So
isn't it supposed to be a time where there will be no war? I mean, there's no will essentially.
So actually, that's not necessarily so clear. Yeah, we're going to have to get back to that another night. Which is, does that mean that everyone's just going to be perfect all the time? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, it's going to depend probably on a certain approach that we're going to have to revisit about what Mashiach's time period is going to look like, or what else may come with it. If it is coupled with Tchias HaMesim, if it's coupled with Olam Haba, those are things we're going to have to get back to. But it's very possible that, at least according to the Rambam, not necessarily. People will still make mistakes. We're still going to, you know, like people think that when Mashiach comes, there's going to be this new reality we never experienced before, which means that anything we had experienced won't exist anymore. So I don't know what that means. We're going to be like the Jetsons, where we're going to be, you know, like living in like outer space. Like, it's according, at least the Maimonidean approach, is that it's going to be regular life. We're going to daven three times a day. People are going to go to work. They're going to have to make parnasa. It's going to be regular life. But with all those other things of this clarity of God, we're going to have national sovereignty in the land of Israel. And the entire world is going to have a similar recognition to us. Now imagine that with regular life. So people are still going to be, you know, getting married and having babies. But they're going to be bringing people into the world in this amazing world, right? So that's what, and according to this Rambam approach, it actually makes it a little bit more exciting, because at least it's something we can wrap our heads around, right? You can actually actually think and dream about what that might look like.
No,
so not necessarily. Because again, this is like a whole class in of itself. So we're going to have to get back to it. We'll table the conversation for now, but we will get back to it. Like there was a video that was posted that I saw, somebody sent to me right before Tisha B'Av. It really got to me. It was a It's a video of a fellow that his alarm goes off in the morning. And so he gets out of bed and his father says, come on, we gotta go to shul. So he gets up, washes up, he grabs his tefillin, he starts heading out the door, and he walks outside, and his alarm clock said Tisha B'Av. When it went off, it said Tisha B'Av. He gets out, he gets dressed and he goes outside, and outside it looks like it's a party. There's people eating pizza and there's, parades, and people are wishing each other a good yontiv, and it's like this incredible experience that's taking place. And it looks like it looks like Purim in Yerushalayim. Like that's what they're portraying in the video. And then the video ends with the frame goes back to the kid back in his bed with the alarm going off, and he wakes up, and it's the way we observe Tisha B'Av because he was just having a dream. But that's really what it's pretty much going to look like. It's going to be regular life, but it's going to be just better. Be much, much, much better. That's the Rambam approach.
He didn't have this magical.
It's not like we're all moving to Disneyland. That wasn't the Rambam's. Yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah, but we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. So now I want to break down these three things. As we mentioned before, again, the three things are, number one, that we are tzipita li Yeshua, we anticipate the salvation for, number one, that we're going to have this goodness of a spiritual height that we had never experienced before. Number two is this national sovereignty, and number three is the entire world is going to recognize God. So let's break down each of those. So number one is the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim in Perek Yud Aleph in the 11th chapter of Hilchos Malachim, right at the end of right at the end of his Mishnah Torah, mamish at the end, he says that here he talks about what Mashiach is going to look like, and then he says, "V'chol mi she'enu ma'amnim bo," anyone that does not believe in this. Or anyone that is not anticipating Mashiach's arrival, lo b'shar neviim bilvad hu kofer. It's not only that he's rejecting the words of the prophets, ela b'Torah u'b'Moshe Rabbeinu, rather even the Torah itself. The Torah itself talks about Mashiach. Unlike, let's say, Tchias HaMesim, where there's no clear source in the Torah itself for Tchias HaMesim. It's only really spoken about in its great depth in the prophets, but when it comes to Mashiach, that's explicit in the Torah. So if we reject it and we're not anticipating it yet, then we're considered to be a non-believer. And then he says, so there, these are the 13 principles come from the Rambam. So the Rambam, this is one of his 13 principles, that we need to be anticipating Mashiach's arrival. It's interesting to note that the Brisker Rav and Rav Moshe Feinstein, both of them had actually the same explanation of the Rambam. The Rambam's focus here of that one needs to be mechake lebiyoso, anticipate his arrival, means that we're anticipating the Mashiach is going to be coming today. The language of Moshe, when he would speak about this, he said, hot, hot, like mamish, like now. We're anticipating that Mashiach is going to be coming now. That's the way that the Brisker Rav said it also, that's really supposed to be how we're anticipating it, that as if it's coming, as if Mashiach is going to be coming right now. And then he says the following. He says that why is it that we're so excited about Mashiach? He says Lonis Avu Achacham, this is the very, very last, very like last few lines of the entire Mishnah Torah. It says, Lonis Avu Achacham Vanaviyam Yivos Mashiach, that our prophets and great sages were not so excited about Mashiach because of Lokadesh Yishlatu Akola Olam. It wasn't so that God is, that the entire world is being governed by the Torah. That was less exciting. And not so that the Jewish people are at a on the socioeconomic standard higher than the non-Jews of the world. That was less exciting. And not in order so that the entire other nations look to the Jewish people as being so great. Those things are going to happen. But that was less exciting to the prophets and to the rabbis. Rather, it wasn't so that we eat better, meaning referring to the types of offerings we're going to be able to eat. Ella, what is so exciting about it? Because we're going to have revealed to us the entire Torah and all of its wisdom. And that's something that we are striving towards today, but we work very, very hard to understand it. To understand all of the wisdom contained within the Torah is something that we spend our lives trying to do, but it's very, very difficult to actually get to the end where we actually get it. But God willing, by Yemos HaMashiach, by the Messianic era, it's not going to be only the greatest rabbi. It's not going to be Rabbi Akiva and the Rambam that have access to the Chachma of the Torah, but even us, we're all going to have access to the Chachma, the greatest wisdom that one can imagine. That is what makes Yemos HaMashiach so exciting. That's what the Rambam writes. That's what the Rambam writes. So that's, and that's also, by the way, you should add on that the Navi Habakkuk says something very similar. The Navi Habakkuk, one of the last of the Nevi'im. One of the last in the Nevi'im writes the following. The Navi Habakkuk says, the Navi Habakkuk writes the following, that upon Mashiach's arrival, what's going to happen is ki tamale ha'aretz ladat, that the entire world is going to be filled with an understanding ladat et kvod Hashem. They're going to understand the kavod, the honor of God, meaning they're going to understand God kamayim yichasu alayam, the same way that we understand how water fills the seas. That's the way we're going to understand God's wisdom. It's just going to be evident. It's going to be obvious, right? You don't see the ocean and not realize that there's water there. But we're just going to be living, and that is how obvious the wisdom of God is going to be for the average person. Now, what you do with that wisdom, as Brian pointed out before, that's still going to be up to us, right? We're not getting, free will's not going away when Mashiach comes. We are, it's still going to be up to us how we use that wisdom, but it's all going to be accessible to us. Absolutely going to be accessible to us. So that's number one thing that we are so looking forward to of Mashiach's arrival. Now, the other two things we mentioned before, the sanctification of Hashem's name over the entire world and our national sovereignty. This also is really emphasized by the Navi Yechezkel. Where the Navi Yechezkel writes the following. Navi Yechezkel is one of the later prophets. Mishaya, Yirmiyahu, and then Yechezkel. Here it is. Yechezkel, Perecha. Navi Yechezkel writes the following. He says, again, describing what it's going to look like by Yemos HaMashiach, by the Messianic era, he says, Bereach Nichoach, that through a this sweet-smelling aroma through the sweet-smelling aroma, Erce Etchem, that I will accept you favorably, meaning when we're bringing karbanos inside the temple. Behotzeit Etchem Min Ha'amim, that Hashem is going to remove us from us having been scattered throughout the rest of the lands. The kibatzi etchem min aratzos, I pulled you in from the other lands, from the other nations. Asherit nifot sotem, that you had been spread out bum within them. V'nikdashti b'chem le'enei agoyim, and I've clearly made you holier and distinguished from the other nations. So here the Navi Yechezkel is emphasizing this aspect of Mashiach's arrival. But these are the different aspects of what we're anticipating. Number one is this incredible goodness, being able to access the wisdom of God. Number two is the, once again, national sovereignty of Kibbutz Galios, the ingatherings that we're going to experience back to the land of Israel, and that the entire world is going to recognize Hashem, His Torah, and His people. Rav Kook has an amazing line. Rav Kook writes, he says that that tzipita li Yeshua, that us anticipating, our anticipation of the salvation, he koach hama'amid, that is the pillar, the foundational pillar, shel hayahadut hagaluyut, of the Jew in galus. That the thing that anchors us, that our pillar that anchors us, our foundation, being able to survive through galus, is the fact that we're anticipating Mashiach's arrival. So Rav Kook adds on one more aspect over here, which is all of the things that we, that should really be the motivators of the goodness we're going to experience and etc. All the things we were talking about before, yes, those are definitely should be motivators. But he also adds on, he says that without that hope, so then a Jew is not going to be able to make it in Galus. That not thinking about the future, but for right now, if we don't hold on to that hope, so then we're not going to be able to survive the experience that we're in right now. So it's really to our benefit to really focus and think about and contemplate the importance of experiencing Mashiach's arrival. The Shulchan Aruch does add on. The Shulchan Aruch writes right in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, he says that a people that are truly God-fearing people, are Yorei Shamayim, take time every single evening to stop and contemplate the fact that we're in Galus and that we need Mashiach's arrival to come. That one needs to stop and contemplate every single evening Mashiach's arrival and to daven for it. That's the right. Says the true Yorei Shamayim do that every single night. We'll just conclude with, I don't even know what time it is. All right. We'll conclude with the how. How will we know that the Mashiach has arrived? Now, again, we're going to come back to a lot of these topics as we go through this series over the next few months, and we'll discuss them obviously in more depth. But just to quickly summarize how we know that the person that is here is Mashiach. So the Rambam, and I'll just give the Maimonidean approach because it's one that seems to be accepted by most, and is like the Rambam has with a lot of things, very rational and very easy for us to be able to put into practice of our anticipation, where the Rambam basically says that there's going to be eight qualifications of Mashiach's arrival. Number one, he says that they are from Melech Beis David, meaning they're from the lineage of David HaMelech.
How does everyone prove that they're...
There's a way of tracing that. There's a way of tracing that.
People that say, I am...
There are people that can trace it back. Go back to David HaMelech. So that's number one, is that, and if the person says it, we believe them. Meaning they come and say, I'm from the house of King David, then we have no reason to assume not that you're not. So that's number one. There you go. Okay.
Wait, even though we have plenty of false messiahs.
So now, but the other things we're going to see now, weed out the false messiahs. Number two is that they're a Talmud Chacham, they're a Torah scholar. Okay. So that already, stop it. That already is already weeding out the crazies, right? Because it's very easy. to be able to weed out whether or not somebody's a Talmud Chacham. How? Other Talmidei Chachamim accept him as a Talmud Chacham, right? That's a very, very simple and natural process. Number three is that they are Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Now, how do you know whether or not a person is Shomer Torah Mitzvos, that they observe all the laws of the Torah? So you can't really observe that. You have no way of knowing that. But what he tells people to do will tell you whether or not. The Rambam has in his Igeres Teiman, the letter that he wrote, there were a number of questions that were brought to his desk from the Jews of Yemen. And so he wrote back a long letter answering many of their questions. One of the questions dealt with somebody who was like a false Messiah. How do we know that he's legitimate? And they told the Rambam, they said that he is telling us that we are supposed to spend a lot of money to do mitzvot. Now, we had spoken about a few weeks ago about Hanukkah, that there's really only a couple mitzvot that we extend ourselves as much as we can financially to fulfill the mitzvah. All other positive commandments, there's a general rule from the Gemara that you don't spend more than a fifth of your bank account to fulfill a mitzvah. And this fellow was telling them to spend a lot more than that to do mitzvot. So they were asking the Rambam, you know, this guy, and they add this detail in the letter that he's doing, he's saying this, do we listen to him? Is he really Mashiach? And the Rambam responds and says, well, if he's telling you to do something that's against the Torah, you know that he's not Mashiach, right? He's telling you to do something against Chazal, against the rabbis, and he's not Mashiach. It's as simple as that. There is a certain false Messiah whose birthday was a couple days ago that also did similar things like that, right? Yashka, yeah. Yeah. Everyone got that one? Okay, good. Yeah. His bris is coming up in a couple days. Yeah. Number four, the Rambam says, is that he's makriv. He is engaging, like we were talking about before, of encouraging others in their relationship with Hashem, doing kiruv, helping people get closer to Hashem. That's number four, the Rambam says. Number five is that he's also stands up in a physical manner to fight for Hashem and his Torah, to defend his people. Such an individual would need to be a part of Tzahal. You need to be part of Tzahal. On some sort of a vigilante basis of fighting anti-Semitism or something like that. You'd have to be somebody that actually takes action to fight against those that are trying to take down the Jewish people. Number six, now those five qualifications, the Rambam says, you can already start assuming, if he meets those first five, you could start assuming that he probably is Mashiach. And then the Rambam adds on three more to know for sure that he's Mashiach. Number six, he wins the battles. Number seven is that he begins the process of rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. And number eight, now he's just taking leadership roles in all of these. And then number eight is then after the Beis HaMikdash is built and he's done all these other things, so now he's taking leadership and doing a kibbutz galios and bringing people in from the exile. I should mention, by the way, the Chafetz Chaim got very excited, very, very excited. I don't know if I mentioned this last time. He got very, very excited when the Wright brothers in 1910 took flight. Got very, very excited about it, like out of character excited. And the Talmidim asked him why he was so excited about the Wright brothers taking flight. He said, how else did you think we were all going to get there? And he was saying that how else would we all get to Israel so fast, right? That if there had to have been some sort of the Chafetz Chaim, he was so excited when the Wright brothers took flight. He said, how else? Did you think we were all going to get there? The Chafetz Chaim went on to say, he said that it must be Hashem is preparing the world for Mashiach's arrival. He said, why wasn't the airplane built 100 years earlier? So one could say, well, that's just not the way industrialism works, right? There is there's a process, right? There's an evolution that first someone needs to take two sticks, rub them together, make fire, and then you learn how to, you know, make metal malleable, and right, it takes time and then you start having, you have a lot of smaller inventions or innovations, and then you have an airplane. So it takes time. So the Chafetz Chaim responded and said, well, if each of those smaller innovations happened a week earlier, so the airplane would have been built like 300 years earlier. Why now? Same, because now Hashem must be getting the world ready for Mashiach's arrival. An incredible, incredible outlook on life, right? I mean, I once I heard that story of the Chafetz Chaim, I thought to myself, WhatsApp, smartphones, like we're all going to get these messages coming in saying, we'll let you know, Neil. Okay. All right, man, not everybody's got the push notifications. We'll let you know, I promise. You're not going to be left in the dark. Okay, we'll call you on your flip phone. Okay. That's what we're waiting for Mashiach's arrival, for you to get a smartphone. But the amount of instant communication we have today. God forbid. The instant communication we have today is incredible. Why else? Why didn't it happen 50 years earlier? Where Hashem is getting us closer and closer and closer, ready for Mashiach's arrival. It's the bottom line. So, God willing, soon we'll be able to experience the full redemption. The Rambam adds in that basically anyone that is from Malchus Beis David can meet these qualifications. It's not some, right, based on what we just described, right? It's somebody that is from the house of David. Fine. That's something that is objective. But then a Talmid Chacham keeps the Torah mitzvos, encourages other people in their relationship with Hashem, fights Hashem's wars, right, is a warrior, is somebody that wins those battles, then goes on to lead the project in building the Beis HaMikdash, and then it takes leadership in the Kibbutz Galus and in the ingathering of the exiles. Could be anybody. Could be anybody, which is why he says the Rambam, that's why he says Rabbi Akiva really was convinced that Bar Kochva, the year 131 to 166 was the Bar Kochva revolt or something like that. The Bar Kochva revolt against the Romans says Rabbi Kiva at the time really thought that he was going to be Mashiach until he said something blasphemous. Once he said something blasphemous, Rabbi Kiva said, then we knew at that point he wasn't going to be Mashiach, because that's it. Then he's not keeping the Torah mitzvos, right? So, but it could have been him. And it's not that, oh, because he said something blasphemous, therefore we knew all along he wasn't. No, he really could have been, had he kept up the par on his observance of Torah mitzvos and his relationship with Hashem throughout him winning these wars and leading this revolt. Right? He was encouraging people in their fulfillment of Torah mitzvos. He himself was a religious Jew, right? All these things. Started rebuilding the temple. Was he mamish? And then after that, it's interesting. The Talmud then changes the way they speak about the character. They don't call him Bar Kochva anymore. Bar Kochva was the son of a star, meaning that he was the shining star that was going to rebuild, that it was going to be Mashiach. They start referring to him as Bar Kozbi, the false one. That's what the way they start referring to him as.
But if he's going to be a person with all these characteristics, let's say, is this Mashiach going to live forever? What will happen after?
Oh, so what's going to happen after? That we have to get back to. Meaning, what it actually practically looks like, Mashiach, the era,
yeah,
the Messianic era, that we have to get back to. After
how can anybody say they come from David? I mean, I see genealogy. I don't know how that goes.
The same way that if somebody shows up at Shul and says I'm Jewish, we don't ask them, or a Kohen, we don't ask them to prove it. If there's something that would suggest that they're not, then we look into it. But if they don't, then we believe them. There's the Gemara. The Gemara is talking about in the end of Masechta the Kiddushin. Talks about how we believe a person's lineage and heritage and things like that. But okay, a fair question. We'll have to get back to it. Maybe I'll do a little more research into that. But yeah, I'll do some more research into that.
So
yeah,
Jack. If someone meets all the other qualifications, the only thing left is the House of David. You just accept that.
Yeah. That's the way we're leaving it for now. I'll do some more research, though.
But I mean, that ought to be the first thing you look at, not the last thing.
Why? Aren't the other things really, really positive things that we're just going to let them continue to do?
But for the Mashiach?
In Rabban's time, there's certainly no way anybody could put in a genealogy.
No. We really take people's word for it. How do we know you're Jewish, Jack? How do you know you're Jewish? But he didn't.
Well, I mean,
maybe you did. I didn't.
Are you questioning me?
Right. This is the way that we function generally. Yeah. That's just the way that we function.
I know, but it's a different standard. Maybe
why?
But maybe that's why.
No, not yet. But I really hope that the person that I meet that does say that is somebody that is also a Talmud Chacham and a Shomer Torah Mitzvos and encourages other people and is also a soldier in Sahal and wins the war and meets all the other qualifications. Then I happily take his word for it.
I mean, Yashka, they said he was from the House of David. Of course, it with the way he was supposed to have been born, that's pretty hard to see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's, if they were saying that, he was.
Right. That would have been impossible the way that, yeah. But, right. Yeah. But anyway, so, so okay, so we have what to daven for, we have what to work on for ourselves, make sure that we're part of this redemptive process. We're anticipating also Neil getting his smartphone, and God willing, next week we'll pick up with the series and continue. We have a lot to get to what the Messianic era is going to look like. We have to get to what's the difference between the Messianic era and Olam Haba, whether or not it's coupled with Tchias HaMesim, with the resurrection of the dead, what exactly that looks like, what its source is. There's so much we need to get to. All right, we have a few months until Purim is probably the next time we switch topics. So we got a few weeks. Purim is in 70 days, 69 days, something like that. So we have some time. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Sure.